Frank Lloyd Wright is the quintessential American architect. He's best known for his works like Falling Water in Pennsylvania that were part of the prairie style, which favored clean lines and harmony with nature. Born in Richland Center in 1867, Wright's work is on display in several private dwellings throughout Wisconsin, and he founded his School of Design, Taliesin, in the Spring Green area. While his personal and design roots ran deep in the Badger State, his reputation as a star architect really took off in New York City. But while New York loved him, he wasn't its biggest fan, calling it everything from a prison to an incongruous man-trap. But despite his dislike, Wright was immensely influenced by New York and might not have had his terrific success without it. Anthony Olofsson holds the Roland Gammel Reussner Centennial Professorship in Architecture at the University of Texas at Austin. He's also the author of Wright and New York, The Making of America's Architect. Anthony, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much, John.
Frank Lloyd Wright, as we think about him today in our popular imagination, very different from Frank Lloyd Wright the person. What was happening with Wright that brought him to New York?
Well, he had experience in New York from 1909 onward, but he began to spend more time in the critical mid-1920s, when his professional life and his personal life were really at nadir. So he goes to New York in the winter of 1925, really fleeing his estranged wife, and thus began a series of visits, increasing in time, that connected him to what was going on in the city at that time.
Frank Lloyd Wright had a, well, let's just say a colorful history in many ways. He was the subject of a lot of stories in tabloid-type newspapers during his lifetime. What was going on with him during the Jazz Age? You mentioned that he went to New York to get away from his estranged wife. What else was happening?
Well, his professional projects had been falling through one after another, and he'd basically been peripatetic from around 1922, when he returned from Japan, right up until he was able to move back more permanently to his home in Spring Green, Taliesin. So he was married to one woman, fell in love with another woman, got her pregnant. This was the woman who became his third wife, Olga Ivanovna. When the wife who he was connected to discovered this, all hell broke loose. All of the newspapers all over the country carried these exploits in a kind of mode of yellow journalism. And Wright's press from mid-1920s could not have been worse. So this is what he was trying to recover from as he headed to New York with the hopes of safety, really, but also two projects that were important for the resurrection of his career.
So what were some of the other challenges Wright faced during during his career?
Well, he was someone whose personality and biography is so large. And, of course, he lived to be almost 92 years old. So this reputation, which he in some ways fostered and inflamed, stood in the way of his progress at times. He alienated some of the very people who were there to support him or to be the kind of clients one needs, particularly for large-scale projects. His ego was really compensatory. He's a guy who had a chip on his shoulder, and that makes for rough dealings with people. He was emulated and loathed at the same time. So he was dealing constantly with this combination of factors as he continually sought to revive his architectural practice. What's always amazing to me is that no matter how messed up his personal life was, the creative flow of his work was continuous and exciting.
Anthony Olofsson is a professor in architecture at the University of Texas at Austin. He's also the author of Wright and New York, The Making of America's architect. So exactly how did New York help repair Wright's career?
Well, when he began to spend time there, one of his oldest and most important friends, a client who people know really nothing about, was a minister named William Norman Guthrie. Guthrie commissioned Wright for two extraordinary projects, and that began to give Wright hope that there was a way out of the problems he was dealing with. And because he was in New York, he came in touch with a circle of young designers and modernists who really promoted him. So the ball starts rolling with these projects, one for an amazing utopian cathedral, the other for an apartment building, with these connections in the literary world. So Wright became part of the discussion of what was happening in the city. At the same time, he began to publish numerous articles in Architectural Record, one of the leading professional journals of the time that was headquartered in New York. So a combination of a vibe promoting him, his writings, and his own publicity of the projects for Guthrie put him in a kind of public limelight. So suddenly, instead of being a pariah, he's asked to give lectures at Princeton University. He's feted by professionals in New York, including the grand old men of the architectural profession, the major figures who'd been producing extraordinary Art Deco buildings throughout the 1920s. So by 1930, his reputation is on the rise. Just when the Depression hits and is making many other architects retreat and fall back.
The relationship that that Wright had with New York seemed mutually beneficial, but what did the architect really think of the city?
Well, that was one of the most fascinating things about this research, because Wright was a guy who was loaded with bluster and rhetoric, and he began to use the city as a kind of whipping boy, as a kind of counterpoint to the ideas he was developing for an ideal way of living in the countryside called Broadacre City. Now, it's interesting to note, Wright is moving back and forth between Taliesin outside of Spring Green and New York, an easy thing to do by train from Chicago. So there's a kind of idealized picture of New York that he's painting with his rhetoric, while at the same time, he's enjoying it immensely. And by the end of his career, he so enjoyed New York that, of course, as we know, he took over a suite at the Plaza Hotel. This became Taliesin East. So the point I'm making is there's the bluster in the rhetoric, the I hate New York thing, but actually the reality that it's New York that's supporting him and turning him around, giving him opportunities that no one else did. Now, another thing to keep in mind for our listeners is there's a long tradition of people complaining about New York, from Herman Melville, who wrote Moby Dick, to poets, artists, and so forth throughout the 1920s. People who loved to complain about the city but were irretrievably drawn to it at the same time. And Wright always wanted to present himself as absolutely unique, but in a way, he was part of a big, long American tradition.
Well, what a fascinating personality Frank Lloyd Wright was, and we're happy that we had you with us today to tell us a little bit about it. Thank you so much, Anthony Olofsson, for being with us today. Anthony Olofsson is the Roland Gamet Reznor Centennial Professorship in Architecture at the University of Texas at Austin. He's also the author of Wright and New York, The Making of America's Architect. He joined us today to talk about the relationship between Frank Lloyd Wright and New York City.